Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Talking Sports with Silverbacks Nation. I'm your host, John Robinson, here on another Wednesday night, July 29th. Beautiful day. I'm out in Katona, New York, watching a softball game. So I'll be giving some play-by-play for Katona softball. We have a couple of teams playing tonight, which will give some updates. And we have a lot of baseball to talk about, from MLB to Silverbacks baseball. Once again, I'm joined with Pops in the house and John Daugherty. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, John.
Good evening, guys.
How are
All right,
John?
Good evening.
Doing great. Beautiful day. Can't believe another month is over. I don't know where the summer's going, but flying by.
It sure is. It sure is. As we wait for our guests, tonight's show, we have Steve Grilley on, Major League Baseball player, 1970s, multiple teams, including the Blue Jays, Detroit Tigers. And following Steve will be Eddie Coleman, New York Mets radio personality. It's going to be a lot of fun today. So, guys, you know, I know, Pops, you had a chance to make it to some games for Silverbacks this week. What do you make of the team so far?
Yeah, we were up in Newburg in the tournament this week with 16Us, 15-16s. They looked pretty good. They were holding their own. I mean, the competition was good. We held ours. And we came out of there, I think we came out of there pretty good. The team that we lost to, we really gave them the runs to win the game. They took the whole match. So we were competitive, and it was good to see the kids out there playing.
Oh, that's great to hear. Great to hear. I have a bunch of stories to tell as well, but I think we may be joined by Steve. Steve, are you with us tonight?
I am. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Say hi to Pops and John Daugherty.
I spoke to John the other day. It was good to hear from him again. I've seen him in Cooperstown a few times at some of the MLB clinics we've done. So.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on, Steve. Thank you again.
Steve, this is Pops. I don't know whether to call you Steve or Mr. Greeley because you're the first guest they finally had on that's got my age beat by a year.
So
can I call you Steve?
You can call me Steve. Yes, Pops.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Steve,
you guys are hit off tremendously. I'm telling you, I would love to sit you guys in a room. You guys would be talking forever.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it.
It would be the best. And the thing I'm loving is I'm hearing all that New York accent. I'm loving it. I miss it.
I love it when they say we have an accent. That's great. I love that. That's terrific. I don't hear it. I'll tell you, Steve. I don't hear it. Yeah, we talk for days. Just put a couple of pitches on the table. I think we can go at it.
There you go.
Well, I own a pub. Come on upstate New York.
I'm coming up to check on those chicken wings you make. I got to take a shot at those.
Well, they've been voted the best.
I was up there, the Empire State Games, my previous job with the state before what I do now with the state. I brought our staff up there one time for they ate wings until the cows came home. They loved them. They ate like lunatics. I had more beers than I did wings, I'll have to admit.
It's a beautiful thing.
Buffalo invented them. We perfected them.
There you go. There you go. I love to hear
there
that.
You go.
Only somebody from Brooklyn, New York can make a comment like that.
Steve, before they steal the show on me, I have a question.
Speaking of what Pops just said, so you were born in Brooklyn, but you went to school in high school in Tennessee. So how long did you stay in New York?
No, see, that's that. Wikipedia's got to make a correction. Born in Brooklyn.
You
got to
give
them
a call then. Let's go.
Yes, I do. I know. They got me down as being a Tennessee. I don't think you hear that kind of accent.
That's what I was wondering. So what else is wrong on that thing?
No, unfortunately, one lost record, all that stuff is right.
Don't worry, John. We'll get to about a few of the stories. We'll find out what's true and ain't. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly.
We got some in the closet here.
So, Steve, yesterday you were talking about, you know, again, we talked about your career a little bit that I knew about. We talked, obviously, about the restaurant stuff, but you were mentioning that you were doing some scouting at one point when you were done and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I go back to – I grew up in Brooklyn. I was born in, but I was raised in Long Island. Went to high school. I really didn't make the varsity baseball team until my senior year.
Wow.
Went on to college. I went to Gannon College, and it was an NAIA school. I was an All-American NAIA, and it's not like being a Division I, II, or III. It's a little below that, but
right.
I made it there. At the end of my junior year, I didn't get drafted. I was approached by quite a few scouts that year, but draft came and went, and I was still in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I was playing on a semi-pro team. The manager of the team was a bird dog scout for the Tigers, so he called his head scout up, Cy Williams from Buffalo, New York. He came down to Gannett, watched me play. After the second time he saw me, he says, I'm going to take a chance on you. And, you know, made it all the way to the big leagues. And that
Look
was the
that.
Dream that I had from, yeah, you know. And John and I,
there's,
you and
there's
I
another
about,
way. And there's another way. You know, we've talked about this for the couple months we've been doing it. We've had so many different guests on who was a number one pick out of high school or a number one pick out of college or a really, really late pick or a, you know, independent ball pick, you know, all these different guys. So, again, there's another way that, you know, as you go on, you're playing summer ball, you get seen, and you get signed, and you wind up going to the major leagues. That's amazing.
And the thing is when, you know, and I know, John, you came pretty much kind of like where I came from when you're in the minor leagues. I wasn't one of those high signees, so you're kind of at the bottom of the barrel, and you really have to prove yourself. So I always used to look ahead to who was pitching that was supposedly higher on the list of going to the next level. And if he went out and pitched a five hitter, I said, I'm going out and pitching a two or three hitter just to show I'm better than him. So it's a competition. I think that's, you know, that's along with some luck, but a lot of times it's a competition. If you don't have it, I don't think you're going to stay in any professional athletic endeavor.
Yeah, right. You're competing right. Your whole life, especially, like you said, the guys like us who don't get the, you know, we talked to Chad Kruder about that a couple weeks back, and Chad had, you know, the one-year deal his whole career until, like, literally to the very end, like after 12 years or something, he finally got like a 2-year deal. He's like, he broke open a champagne, and you know, it's like,
yeah,
wow. Like,
yeah.
Not that you can relax, because you're always going to compete and you always want to prove your worth and all that kind of stuff. But 100%, you're constantly competing your whole entire career, whether it's against another, as you know, as pitchers, whether it's against another batter, another team, but mostly against yourself is what you're always competing, trying to prove yourself that you know, that you're better than the last time you were out there. 100%.
Well,
so how did you wind up getting into scouting then after that?
Well, it was quite a few years later. My manager in AAA, when I ended my career, was Vern Benson. He was a big stalwart. He coached the third base for the St. Louis Cardinals in the big leagues for a number of years. And he wanted to become a manager. They sent him down here, and he was managing us over here. But long story short, when he got out of the game, he didn't get the St. Louis managing job. He came out of the game, and he was working for St. Louis in the front office. They needed a Northeastern scout. He called me up and asked me if I was interested. So, I mean, this was years later. I was out of the game for quite a long time. And as you guys probably know, once you're out of the game, man, you just, you know, you feel so empty. And
man,
any opportunity
you
can to, yeah, any opportunity you can to, you know, kind of stay in the game, try to take it.
Being a scout, scouting in the Northeast is not the most fun thing to do either, is it?
Oh, God, no. Oh, my God. I had Ontario. I had to go up to Toronto, too. And, oh, yeah. To say how, you know what, I called John Mozeliak, who was in the scouting department at the time. He's now the GM at St. Louis. But I was watching a St. Louis Cardinal game, and they have almost like football jackets in the wintertime. They go down to your ankles. I saw the guys in the bullpen wearing them one night, and I called John up. I go, John, I scout in the Northeast. I says, I need one of those jackets, and he sent me one.
There you go.
So, yeah, Northeast is tough.
Go ahead, Pop.
Yeah, Steve, it took you a while to get up, though, didn't it, into the majors? I mean, they say that if you're a relief pitcher, it's kind of hard to get credit in the minor leagues.
Well, yeah, it took me I got there in my fifth year, and that year was the team we had was just unbelievable. We won the Junior World Series. So, you know, I had a stellar year that year. I think it was 11-3 as a reliever. I was 11-3 with, I think, 13 or 14 saves. But prior to that, in Double-A and A-ball, I was a starter all the way up there. Bruce Kim is the one that made me a reliever. He managed shortly with the Chicago Cubs. He was Mark the Bird Fitterich's catcher. And Bruce went to management and says, listen, this kid's got two pitches. He doesn't have an off-speed pitch. He's got to come. You can't let anybody go around and see him more than once. So they made me reliever, and that's what got me to the show.
Yeah, you had a good career.
How'd you make that adjustment? Because I know I had to do the same thing, you know, when you know, when you're in high school and you're playing in the Northeast, if, you know, you're pretty much a starter, you know, especially probably even more so in your day. It was, you know, none of the specialized pitching, all that kind of stuff. You basically were a starting pitcher. And, you know, here I am, you know, starting my whole life. And all of a sudden I graduate college, I get to the minor leagues. And I'm like, what's the name of that school again? And you're going to be in the bullpen. Like, you know, I didn't go to, you know, UCLA or Texas A&M or any of these fancy schools. And so it was a little bit of adjustment. So how was your adjustment to that?
I reflecting on that, I think basically it was like, you know, better than getting your name called out during stretching exercise to report to the front office in the minor leagues. It was like, uh-oh, this guy just got cut, you know. But, you know, at that particular time, like I said, whatever they wanted me to do, and Bruce, you know, and Bruce's lead to me, I mean, he's still one of my best friends. I stay in touch with him. He goes, you know, this kid throws hard. He's got a good slider, but he can't. I never could challenge or quite grasp the changeup. And, you know you have to have more than two pitches to pitch in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, my slider
game.
Was my thing. I had to fast by the changeup, but the slider was some days it was non-existent. Other days it was great, but other days it was not, you know, it just wasn't as consistent as I needed it to be. So yeah. I get that.
75, Steve, you had a great year in Detroit. You did 102 innings. You saved 12 games. You won 11. ERA 3 or under, which is terrific. How was it to play for Ralph Houk? And here's the other question. And Mark Friedrich, the Bird, as we know. I don't know if these young guys out there would know the Bird.
Well, the ESPN's shown, or I think MLB has shown enough of the documentary about him. So if you didn't know who he was, you got to, you know, if you're a fan, find out who he is and see if you can somehow on YouTube or something get Fitterich's career. But, no, Ralph Houk, you know, I mean, I'm being honest. Ralph Houk was – he had some great years as a manager, and I hate to say it, but I think I could have managed any of those teams too. anything away from him. But, Ralph, you know, Ralph Houk had a pretty easy back in those days because that the lineup with Maris, Mantle, Elson Howard, Yogi Berra, my God. It isn't taking anything away, but anybody, I think those years were great years for him because he had a great team. When he came over to the Tigers, I found him to be, and I was a rookie, and there was a lot of rookies, and we didn't have a great team at the time. We were below 500, I think. And I think he was a older or veteran type of manager. And John will attest, and Pop, probably you know, certain managers that are in the management of that ball club, but there's also players type of managers that, and I think Houk was more of a veteran player if I had to categorize what he was.
Yeah,
And you let,
he looked
you
very
let
low key, you know.
Was,
yeah.
Mark was probably one of the brightest spots of my career to be able to even say I played with him, and I played in the minors with him, and you know, played a couple of years in the big leagues. I invited him out to Cooperstown for a fundraiser grant. For years I invited him, and he kept turning me down. The year before he died, he finally said yes, and he entered the tournament with me. And he said, you know, I'm never going to say no to you again. This was great. And unfortunately, that winter, he passed away in a freak accident.
Yeah.
If you want to see what he did, John, you know, we all go around and you go to Minnesota and, you know, there might be, you know, maybe 15, 20,000 people in the stands. And then all of a sudden Mark pitches the next day. And this is in an away park. And those 15,000 that were there the night before is probably there for dime beer night or something. But the next night he pitched, the place was packed. He was a phenomenon. Everybody wanted to see him pitch.
He really took the baseball world by storm, boy. He was unbelievable. And like
it was
said,
wow, he was crazy.
Houses. He was a showman.
He played,
I don't think he was trying to be a showman, right? He was just quirky and just a different
guy. Was he like that
in
the minors? Did he do that in the minors?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot
he
of
did.
People thought it was an act. No, he did it. He did it in the minors. And, I mean, Jeff Hogan was our third baseman. He's the one that tagged him with the Bird. Commented, and everybody after that started calling him the Bird. But he was a genuine individual. I was in Detroit. We were living in the same complex, and he found out that I was going to have a tune-up with my car. He says, "I'll do it." And then next morning he came over. He had all his tools, and he tuned up my car. I mean, he was an earthy guy. He was a farmer. He was a mechanic. He, you know,
that's incredible.
But he played the game, Pops, like he was 16 years old.
That's wonderful.
It's a game,
right?
That's
what you
should do. Let's see if this story sounds familiar to you, Steve. Jim Campbell was your general manager, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yeah.
So I heard the story when he finally got to the big league that he was his attire wasn't – he didn't have the greatest wardrobe. And so
no,
they gave him like $1,000 to go get some clothes. And he went out and bought $1,000 worth of the same kind of clothes that he always wore, jeans and flannel shirt and stuff.
That was
and they're like, wait a second, what are you doing? So they actually had to take him to the store and buy him some real, like, suits and stuff when you guys traveled. I thought that was the greatest story. And it just shows, again, that he's just a regular down-to-earth guy. I did not like that.
Did you pick him up some sweatpants, John, like you wear?
Hey, you'll appreciate this. the in-between years in the big leagues that I had, I lived in Detroit. A friend of ours started a basketball team of all Detroit Tiger players that stayed in Detroit.
Oh, wow.
And we used to travel around the high schools and we'd raise money. And they pay us $100 a game. We were like, great, this is super. When you're making $16,000 in your first year in the big leagues, $100 is
right.
still a lot of money. But we would travel from town to town together. And, you know, in the car, we'd get to the gym, we'd change. Afterwards, you have a couple beers and get in the car and go back. And I was driving this one night and I got pulled over. And I got New York plates, I got New York license. And trust me, my name wasn't a household name back then. So the cop looked at my license and goes, New York, what are you doing in Detroit? When he pulled me over for speeding, he put me back in the back seat of his car. And he's discussing things with me. What am I doing in this area? Yada, yada, yada. What are these guys doing in the car? He was questioning everything. And then I says, I play for a foundation and we just played a high school fundraiser. And I play for the Tigers. And he looked at my license. He goes, you did? I know. I do. As a matter of fact, I got Mark Fidrich in my car. He goes, what? You got what? I got Mark Fidrich in the car. He goes, go get him. Go get him.
I got out of the car,
got him out of the car. He sat in the back seat with me. Opened the door, jumped in. He goes, what the hell's going on here? And I says, he pulled me over for speeding. He goes, and the cop goes, Mark Fidrich, it really is you. and of course,
no ticket, right?
Ticket.
You should have hit him with the candy camera trick.
So, yeah, he was a character, and we had, now trust me, it's probably, as we all know that played the game, there's a lot of stories. That's one of my favorite with him.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I always get it intrigues me to look at these things that you said, the money, forget the money back then in those days. But when you think about it, when you debuted in September of 75, you were the 11,333rd player ever to put on a major league uniform. I mean, that's crazy when you think about it, right? There were only 11. I mean, I was somewhere in the 13,000 or something like that. But it's crazy to think that there was only 11,000 before you. It's really unbelievable. It really, I can never understand that. To this day, there still hasn't been more than 20,000 guys who ever put a major league uniform on, which is it's just so hard to understand that.
And you know, when somebody told me a couple, and I didn't know this till about, you know, 3-4 years ago. I never knew what the number was, but it made you feel a little special when you saw how low the number was. You know, it's
right?
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, I did it. I did it.
And that was your salary,
how
you made $16,000 your first year?
First year, and in my first year with Detroit, I was second on the teams to John Hillers in appearances for a pitcher. I walked into the office, and Jason, my son, had just been born, and I walk into Jim Campbell's office, and back then, if you had an agent, he would let you go. He would find a place for you. He didn't want to deal with it. I walk in. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, oh, 15, I got to at least make 20, 21,000. And I walk in and Stevie, you had a boy I see in the paper here. I go, yeah. And he calls the secretary and he asks her to bring in a check for $500, and which he did. And he gave it. He put my son's name on. He says, this is for your son, not you. And then we negotiated our contract. I walked out of there for, I think I got 18.5. I was like,
minus the 500.
That's amazing. It really is.
Hey, you know what's amazing? You're 31 years old and you're playing for the Rochester Orioles, right?
Right.
You go through one of the longest games in baseball pro history, 33 innings.
Yeah,
and they want something from you for the Hall of Fame. Tell them what it was.
Well, they asked me for my baseball hat right after the game, and at that point, I was like, you take anything you want. You can take the jock strap. I don't care, because I knew it was going to the Hall of Fame. Because he says, you know, I need something for you because it's going in the Hall of Fame. And
incredible.
Trust me, as it was, I was 196 games short of winning 200 games in the big league, so I wasn't going to get there any other way.
That's great. That's just incredible. Good for you.
But, ironically, Pop, I wasn't even there for the first 32 innings. I don't know if you knew that.
You probably have a Mark Fidrich somewhere.
No, but yeah. What happened was I was in Syracuse playing for the Toronto Blue Jays AAA club, and the game got suspended because the umps were ignorant to the fact that there was a curfew at midnight. So they just let it kept going, and it was freezing. But anyway, I got released from the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Orioles picked me up, and they sent me to Rochester. I go to Rochester, and Doc Edwards, my manager, when they resumed the game, he gave me the ball. He says, "You're starting the 33rd inning." And so I wasn't even there. I said, you know, my famous quote after the game was, "What those guys took 8 hours and 25 minutes to do, I undid in 2 minutes." So I remember I drilled.
Yeah, you did it colorfully, too.
Oh, I did. But, yeah, I mean, I'm in my office right now at home, and there was more to do about that game because at the time Major League Baseball was on strike.
Yeah.
That was like one of the biggest shows in town when the game resumed. There was all kinds of press from all over the country.
Well, it was another big show. Yeah. Another big show you did up in MacArthur Stadium when they played the Doobie Brothers song. You want to tell us about that little adventure?
Well, you know, now that they got the scoreboards that gets the crowds going, well, we were in we were in contention to win, and that was 1979. We were going to win the Governor's Cup. We were in contention to go for that. And I was on the bus, one of the bus trips, and I was in charge of the boombox, we used to call them back then.
Okay.
And I loved the Doobie Brothers. So I was playing the Doobie Brothers, and Steamer Lane Breakdown came on. And I was tired of hearing in between the seventh inning stretch at our stadium, "Thank God I'm a country boy," by no due respect to John Denver. But I took it, and I went up to the booth, and I had a tape of the Doobie Brothers Breakdown because I started rocking to it. And they played it in the seventh inning, and I was trying to get the crowd going. Somebody had a bat down in the bullpen. I picked it up and I played the air guitar, and the crowd went nuts. They went nuts. So every seventh inning, I had to do that. They were more interested in paying me for my act than my pitching.
I wonder if they got that on YouTube. You think that's on YouTube, John?
What's that?
You think that's on YouTube?
I tell you, Pops is going to come up with some information. I don't know where he gets his information from. This guy's amazing.
No, it's incredible. It's incredible because I love this stuff. You know, stats is not my game. If you made it to the major leagues, you're already a star. I don't look at stats.
Right.
I don't look at records. If you made it to the major leagues and put on a major league uniform, you're there in my book. I don't care about anything else. But I love the story behind the story. And this is the game in the game. It's great.
Yeah,
it is.
It's really
cool. It's a game you fall in love with. Yeah.
I'm sorry. So back in your day, you know, obviously today with all the technology that they got going on, I'm not talking about banging drums and stealing signs from the center field. I'm talking about all the other stuff that's going on in the game. What's your thoughts on that? What do you like about it? What do you hate about it? I know some of the things that changed with I don't know if this is just because of COVID this year, but putting a guy on second base, all these different things.
Yeah,
what have you liked about the game that's changed, or what do you hate that's what's about changed?
Well, you know, the purity of the game sometimes I think is kind of they've lost a little something. It's still the greatest game. I mean, I got friends and family that are telling me that they're so happy that baseball's back, even though we're looking at cardboard cutouts behind home plate. It's like a couple of things that to me that changed was, you know, when the designated came in, it's a rule that I hated. And the reason for it is I was a borderline. When I made the 25-man roster, I was either that 24th, 25, or 26th guy. When the DH came along, the manager didn't need a deep bullpen. So I believe when the DH came along, I think it may have cost me a couple of years in the big leagues because of the fact that you didn't need that extra pitcher of the DH. This rule now with man on second base starting it out, I love it. You know why? Because now I know my 33-inning game is never going to be broken.
That's funny.
Really, I mean, you put a man on second base, somebody's eventually going to score. So that record's intact. the technology that's going on.
I'd like to know, like, you know, obviously back in your day, you know, weight rooms, all this kind of stuff. We talked about your son briefly, and we definitely want to get into that before we let you go. Is, you know, how cool is it to raise a Major League Baseball player? I mean, I always said, you know, again, my son, I don't want to make like my son had, you know, whatever, but I would have loved, I would have given up, you know, some of my experience to have his better. Now, he had a longer career than yours, a better career, you know, and I'm sure you're thrilled that that was the case. But I just want to talk about quickly compared to what you did in your off seasons working out as opposed to what Jason has been doing, you know, in his off seasons working out. And, you know, how was that raising a player and teaching him what to try and do to keep himself healthy and in shape and all that stuff?
Great question. I'm kind of glad you asked that. You know, what was I doing? I think I alluded to it in my early story. In the off season, we were playing basketball so we can get a couple extra $100 in our pocket. Seriously.
That's amazing
these guys
to me.
These guys today, they've got to be in the gym. It's so much more competitive. I mean, look at the back of my baseball card, 6'2", 170 pounds. My son, when he was about 11 years old, he says, Dad, you were skinny, and you made it to the big leagues. You know, now you look at these guys. I mean, when I was scouting the Cardinals, they were looking for guys on the mound being 6'5". And these guys, you know it, everybody does. The guys today, if you look at an old film from – I got some old film from the 70s of when I played. And I look at today, and my wife even points it out. She goes, my God, she goes, they're so much bigger today. But, and like you said,
but
I
your
think
son,
it, it
I mean,
comes,
Jason's what? How big is Jason? He's like 6'4", 230 or something like that, no?
Yeah, he's huge. He's huge. I mean, and he's solid. And, you know, the greatest part of that story with him is he was in the gym time after time after the season. I mean, he gave himself maybe a couple of weeks off, and then he was in the gym. He had a personal trainer. The end of the story is something that I love. At the end of my son's career, he made it through a lot of injuries, and he had this one personal trainer, and he lived in Orlando. He called him up to where Jason lived, which was it was in Pittsburgh. And he came up, and he says, geez, I got to pick up a part at the store, at the car dealership. He goes to the car dealership. He says to his trainer, he said, wow, that's a nice-looking truck over there. And he goes, yeah, that's nice. He says, let's see it. Look at it. Make a long story short, they get out there admiring the car, and Jason throws them the keys to it and says, thanks for all you've done for me. And
it was
a way of kind of saying thank you. But, yeah, today's players got to be in the gym. The competition level is extremely high. And you don't
that's
know.
That's story.
You know, it's from all over the world. You're competing. The Major League Baseball is expanding the game, you know, in Europe. I know Italy's even starting up now. Australia, look at the World Baseball Classic. There's a lot of competition out there. So if you're a boy that lives in the United States, you got a lot more competition, I think, than I did back in my day.
Talk about your stress level a little bit that we spoke about yesterday, watching your son
God.
Go through the ranks in the minor leagues and into the big leagues.
Oh, my God. You know, in his era, my father never knew what I did. You know, there was no cell phones. There was no computers back then. Me, even in the minor leagues, I could either listen or watch to every game. And I don't think that's really good for an elderly parent to be watching these games with the bases loaded and wondering who's going to get his snot knocked out. And my wife used to laugh at me because I'd be screaming at the TV. And if he did well, I was, you know, it was like I just opened up all my presents on Christmas. And if he did poorly, I was miserable for 2 days until he got a chance to pitch again. I was miserable. I was miserable.
So does the stress factor ever go away?
Brought you a little peace, right?
it's so stressful. I'm telling you. I said to him, and I watch him at his son's game now, and his son's only 13. And I start laughing. I go, wow, you're gonna go through the same crap I did.
And how is his son, 13 years old? I mean, I know he's only 13, but you see any potential there?
We can use him.
I'll tell you what. He's got the size. He's and believe it or not, he and my other grandson, they live right around the corner from each other. They're going to a trainer together at 13 years old. And he's doing well. He hit his first home run the other day. I think he's like a baby deer. He's growing into his size.
Terrific.
He's big like his daddy is.
Yeah, we.
So with all of that, no regrets. No regrets at all, right? Steve?
No regrets. No, I've been blessed. I have. I've been blessed. God blessed me with a beautiful family. Let me live my dream.
Hall of Famer.
Office. Yeah.
Hall of Famer. They'll never let that go by. You're a Hall of Famer. If they ever caught you siphoning the gas out of the cars back in the minors, you might not be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, when you make the $500
you know what I'm saying, Grill? Where'd you get this stuff from?
I know. $500 a month I was making back then. I lived in a trailer in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina.
And you talked about poor John Denver.
Right, Rocky Mountain back then.
That's
right,
why you hate that song. There you go.
But honest to God, I had to rub two nickels together. There were the five things, and we rent money. And
incredible.
And there was a car lot across the street from our trailer, and I said to Freddie, I go, Freddie, we need gas for tomorrow. Come on, it's after 12. Let's go, midnight. So we siphoned the gas into a trash can, and that's how I got my gas back then.
Only from Brooklyn, brother. Only from Brooklyn. Nobody else.
Just on these kinds of stories, it would be like an encyclopedia.
It's not even a Bronx guy like me would do that, Steve.
Hey, Steve, tell that story you told me yesterday real quick. You know, because I want for the kids that are listening out there. We got a bunch of you guys playing tonight, but they could obviously go back and listen and stuff. But the little story you told me yesterday, or 2 days ago, whenever it was, about the kids going into the batting cage. Just so I want to get. Teach these kids a lesson from that little story.
Yeah, especially from a scouting standpoint, too. And, what you want as a teammate, John and I, that was a good – yeah, thanks for bringing that up, John. But, I coached – I do clinics. I coached. I had travel teams. And we were working out one day in the cages, indoor cages, and the kids were coming out of the cage one at a time, and they'd lift the net up and drop it, lift the net up and drop it. About eight kids through, one kid lifted it up and he held it up for the rest of the team. I stopped everybody in their tracks. I said, "That's my captain. You are my captain because you care about your teammates. You care about your team." I says, "Guy," and it's a lesson because as a scout, you're always looking for the guy doing other little stuff besides his athletic ability. How he handles himself, how he talks to people, how he is with his teammates. I mean, these are the things. I mean, not even for a professional major leaguer, but geez, college coaches, high school coaches, if these kids can get it through their heads that there's more to the game than just being able to be, good on the field. You got to be good in the dugout. You got to be good off the field. So
that's a great lesson,
that's a life
Steve.
Lesson.
Great lesson. Yeah, absolutely. And I know I always use that when I do my life skills, talk when we do the Major League Alumni Clinics. That's my whole thing is you never know who's watching you. And,
that's right.
I have a buddy, he's a chief of police in my town. He says he always feels like the kids in town, they should have to walk around with their parents' name on the back of the shirt. So, in other words, hey, you want to represent yourself like a fool, that's one thing, but don't represent your parents like a fool, So it's kind of like the same idea. You never know who's watching you.
Hey, John, and you just gave me chills, I swear to God, because you brought up memory of my dad, God rest his soul. But my dad, when I was old enough and you go through high school, you get in high school years, he's like, there's going to be a lot of things out there you're going to be tempted with. He says, but remember, you have my last name. I gave you my last name. And it's your grandfather's last name and it's your great-grandfather. He says, don't you ever do anything to tarnish that name. And that's a great point you made.
Isn't it amazing, though, the older the parents to get, the smarter they get, right? That's what you think of as a kid, right? It's so true.
Yeah.
Steve, let me wrap this up with one more question. I had a great time listening to the conversation. Wonderful stories. I'm sure the kids got a lot of information from you. Final question for tonight. Regarding technology and the use of video analytics, things like that, the constant critiquing of yourself, do you wish you had that back then, or would that have taken a little bit of the love of playing away? I mean, what do you think about the overanalyzing of yourself these days?
Good question.
Well, the cyber genetics of the game is I'm not into it because I don't understand it. I haven't taken the time to understand it. But the good old fashioned hardball, people like sometimes 3-2. He's coming for the fastball. Who's better? The guy throwing the ball or the guy who's going to hit it? The technology. I guess I would have liked to have used it. I remember we spoke of Ralph Houck, my manager. You'd sit around going over the hitters back in my day, and I'll never forget when we were going through the lineup, and Roy Smalley, this guy, and we got to Rod Carew and Ralph Houck. We were going over how you're going to pitch him. Ralph Houck goes, just throw the ball down the middle and hope he hits it at somebody. So that's a little taste of the old days. Today,
that's
they were going to say, on the 2-1 count on a sunny day on grass, this guy is hitting, so be careful. You know, I mean, they've got everything from, you know, I'm not kidding, day games, on grass, away, home. Counts.
Yeah,
I mean,
so you might as well use it. You might as well use the information. I love what you said. Like, you're right. Back in the days, like, here it comes. Let's see who's better today, you know? But like you said, in today's world, you're crazy not to have that knowledge. I know some people still have a little bit of difficulty with it. Maybe it gets in their head a little too much, and I can understand that as well. But, you know, I go back to the Kirk Gibson home run when he tells that story. He steps out of the box because the light bulb went over. He remembers the scout dumb. 3-2 count, he goes backdoor slider, and what does he do with the next pitch? Backdoor slider, and he hits it out for a home run, one of the most famous home runs in the history of the game.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I've seen guys wearing those, you know, the football players wear those wristbands with all the plays and stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's major league players are going. So the game definitely is changing, and, you know, we still love it. I mean, it's overcome an awful lot of, you know,
sure
you go
has.
Back to the scandals and all that stuff, but it always comes back because, it's the love of the game. I think the reason I think a lot of people love baseball because they've played it. You know, a lot of other sports, guys didn't play basketball or football, but I think almost everybody plays baseball. And you know, when you share it with your family and you go to the park together and all that good stuff, there's nothing like it. A good hot dog and a nice cold beer.
I'm ready to get back to the stadium. Steve, thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been a pleasure talking to you and listening.
No, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for bringing up some good memories.
Steve, it's been great.
You are awesome. Thank you so much, brother. I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks again. Say hi to yourself,
take
to me, please.
You take care of that grandson.
Take care, Pops.
Steve.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks, John Daugherty, for that. Another great interview. Sounds like he had major league stuff, you know, and he even through his college with NAIA. You could be found anywhere if you have it. You know, it doesn't matter going to D1, D2, whatever it is. You can be found if you have it, right?
John,
hey, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Like you said, NAIA, Concordia College was NAIA, I think, a year or two before I went there. When Willie Frazier, who we had on a few weeks ago, number one pick out of that small school, I think they were NAIA the year he got drafted. I could be wrong, or it was their first year as, you know, NCAA Division II. But like I said, you will get found. 100% you will get found if you're that good, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, John, I wanted to tell you, I picked up that book from Rusty. I got that book today, The Physics of Pitching by Rusty Meacham.
Oh, yeah?
It's fun to read it. I'll let you know how good it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm interested to hear about that one.
Yeah, I guarantee you have some going. Take a read on it. He was a character, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny. Like, everybody we talk to, I want to say everybody we talk to is a character in their own way, shape, or form. I mean, it's just, you know, some of these stories, like you said, they're classic stories.
Oh, they are.
And
they're tremendous. I laugh like heck when I look them up, you know. I try to find something on them, you know. And I just shake my head and I say, you know, this is great, you know.
You
to relieve the stress to do
back,
anything.
You know, to put you on payroll.
You don't think back of games so much. You think back of some of the fun things that you did outside of the game, you know, whether it's before a game, after a game, during a rain out, you know, whatever the case is. And those are the memories you think about. You know, when you're going through the minor leagues, it's not always like, oh, like this is the greatest thing on earth. It's hard. Like you said, you're competing, you're fighting for your life every day. But when your career's over and you think back, it's like, you know what, minor leagues wasn't so bad. It was, you know, those 14-hour bus drives, you know, hour drives. I was probably laughing 7 hours of the trip. You know what I mean? The other half sleeping.
That's what I wanted to touch on with you too, John. Down in the minor leagues, the stress factor, right? Stressful down there, no doubt. But is it?
Yeah.
10 times more stressful when you make the majors?
Um, You know what? That's a great question, but I don't really know the answer to that. I think it's kind of all the same because, you know, it's, you know, just because you're there, like you said, you want to stay there. So maybe it's a little bit more because you want to stay there and,
yeah,
you know,
and the talent
yeah,
is there. So
kind of
yeah.
constantly while you're there. I mean, not that you don't have to in the minor leagues, but the minor leagues, you may have a little bit of a longer leash, so to speak, longer rope or whatever. So yeah, it's probably a little more stressful than major leagues because again, there's guys throughout the whole entire Major League Baseball that they go replace you with, but also there's 24 guys at the level below you and another 24 guys below that. Well, not depending on what position that can maybe come up and fill your spot, but it's stressful the whole time. I mean, you try to just play the game and enjoy it. And you know, when you the guy was very fortunate that I did very well in the minor leagues, but you know, even when you don't pitch well, maybe one or two wins, even one or two outs in a row or something like that, you start, oh my God, this is, you know, are they gonna send me down? Are they gonna release me? So yeah, this constant, like I said, like we talked about earlier with Steve, it's constant competition.
Right.
And, you know, I try not to worry about competing against other guys because I couldn't control what they were gonna do when they went out there. And, you know, as a teammate, I don't want to wish them bad or have them, you know, you want to win as a team. That's what makes everything fun, by winning as a team. But, you know, again, if a guy is a couple of guys rolling ahead of you, that's going to make your, you know, a little tougher for you to shine. But, you know, it also gave you a little bit of motivation to keep on working hard, so you wouldn't hopefully outshine them.
Well, that's the thing. The kids, a good lesson to the kids out there is no matter how good you are, just keep working and working and working because you can always get better. And
well,
you can always learn. You can always learn something.
Yeah, and you can't control anything else. All you can control is what you do. You can't control your teammate going 4-for-4. You can't control him going 0-for-4. The only thing you control is what you do, the work ethic you put in, and that's the only thing you can control. And that's why I tell kids all the time, we all know how difficult this game is. It's a very difficult game. Some play for different reasons. Some play just to have fun. Some play because they want to get to the next level. Some play because they're competitive as heck. Whatever the reason is, you know, even if you're playing for fun, when you walk off the field, you should be tired, you should be sweaty, you should be smelly, and you should be dirty, you know? And if you do that for every single game, you're doing something right, and good things are going to happen to you.
That sounds like me, and I'm not even on the field half the time.
You know, as we wait for Ed Coleman, New York Mets personality, WFAN host, I'm back at the softball game here. The girls are doing well on the field. I tell you, there's some good athletes out here. They could play travel baseball, some of them, for sure. Very impressed. Very impressed. All right, we have a 12U game going on tonight in Robinson Lane. They're down 7-2. They're up at bat. Hopefully they make a nice little comeback. For those that are listening, we're waiting for Ed Coleman coming up at 8 o'clock. If you'd like to follow along and listen to the rest of our previous episodes, you can find them at www.nysilverbacksbaseball.com. Any live chatters, send us your questions. John Daugherty pops are on the air, ready to answer. So, Steve mentioned something very important as he's training kids and teams. And even at the major league level, John, there's always that one personality, regardless of the talent, because at that point, everyone has talent. But there's always that one guy that becomes the leader, right? The voice, the inspiration,
yep.
even two major leaguers. And how important is that at any level for a team to get that added? I mean, what is it? It's just that added edge?
Yeah, we always talk about how important it is to have some chemistry on the team. You know, it seems like the teams that, you know, when the Astros are winning and a couple of years ago the Yankees, all they had great chemistry. They all get along one another. I mean, I think that's important, and it kind of shows, not that you have to have it to win, but I think I think most of the time you do have it, and most of the time, you know, it's a lot more fun when you have it. You know, like I said, you don't want to be sitting there rooting against one of your teammates. You don't want to, like, be able to walk, you know, walk past the locker room, walk on the other side of the locker room because I don't want to look at that guy, talk to that guy. You know, the more you guys, the more everybody gets along, the more fun it is. The more camaraderie you have, the more fun it is, and to me, the more chances are that you're going to win. I really
yeah.
believe that. And like you said, every team always seems to have some kind of an outspoken guy. You know, Kirk Gibson, you know, was a guy that I played with that was an outspoken guy. You know, you hear the famous story when he went to the Dodgers, and I forget who the Met was. I think it was Orozco or he is somebody. I think it was Jesse Orozco put, like, eye black on his hat And when he put his hat on, you know, the eye blocker, Kirk Gibson lost his mind. He lost his mind, and that's why you guys are a bunch of losers and haven't won for years and blow up all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
and,
no.
And turn that team around just by, you know, by the comment like that, you know what I mean? Besides probably knocking a guy out. Kirk isn't shy of anybody. It's always nice to have those guys, the team leaders, for sure.
You know, John, I was thinking the other day, I was thinking about it. I was watching Magnum PI, you know, and he had gone from the island over to Detroit. He finally got to see the Tigers, and he got caught up in a case. He didn't get to the stadium. And Trammell and Whitaker were in it. It was very entertaining. I said, oh, my God, look at these two guys. I was thinking of Doherty right away.
Yeah, I got to meet him. He'd come into clubhouse, and you know, we'd see him every once in a while. I got my sister-in-law was a big Tom Selleck fan, so I got him to autograph a ball for her and stuff like that. Really nice guy, and a big guy too. You know, big guy. It was pretty cool. Those are some of the cool perks over the years with different people you get to, you know, Glenn Fry and Pete Seeger, and you know, all these different Bob Seeger. Well, I forget which Seeger. I met one of the Seegers, but all these different people you get to meet over the years who come into clubhouse and visit and stuff like that. So that night, Glenn Fry, he autographed the ball for me. He says, how about a little chin music? So I told him, I said, you know, I'm not going to go into it right now, but I told him, I said, I'll buzz somebody for you tonight. And I buzzed somebody for him. So it was pretty cool. After the game, he got a kick out of it. So, you know, a lot of fun stories like that.
Yeah, that's good. You probably sit back in your chair at night sometimes in a rainy night and just start laughing at the things that come up in your mind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still do it with my college buddies. You know, I called my college buddy up a couple of weeks ago. I was in the garage, and I don't know what made me think of something I called, and we were hysterical laughing. I mean, we just couldn't stop laughing just about the nonsense stuff that we did back in college. So that's the best part about sports, just the camaraderie. You always have that friendship and that camaraderie, you know, forever, which is the best. You know, John just made a comment a little while ago. I wanted to say, when he's talking about the softball, they could probably play in a couple of the travel teams. You know, back when I was a kid, you know, so, oh, you throw like a girl. You know, you can't say that anymore. I mean, there's
girls
out there. They throw that ball overhand like you have. They throw phenomenal.
Right.
So, you know, that comment is way out the window for years now. I mean, there's some super duper female athletes out there. Like you said, they're tremendous softball players. But, you know, some of them are probably good enough, like you said, to actually play hardball.
Now, John, with Ed Coleman, now, how do you relate with him now? How do you get into his kitchen?
Well, so how do I get to know Ed?
Yeah.
Well, so years ago, again, during this quarantine, I've told this story a bunch of times, too. Over the years, over the last couple months, I went through all my buckets in the closet, in the attic, and just doing a lot of cleaning and videotapes, audio tapes. Came across one of my audio tapes. Ed Coleman interviewed me back in 1992 when he was on WFAN. But he happens to live in here where I live. I don't want to give all that away, but he lives in my neighborhood, I should say. And he's actually very good friends with one of my good friends. Their daughters, I think, played sports together, whatever the case is. And so then I got to hang out with him a couple times here and there. And the funny thing, I was going to bring it up to Ed tonight. I don't know if he remembers. I'm 99.9% sure that I actually looked at his house when he was selling his house. My wife and I went to go look at his house.
You're kidding.
So it just shows, just because you're a Major League Baseball player, you know, Ed has a tremendous career going. So I'm looking at his house.
Does.
He wasn't coming to look at my house.
That
but
is
just
funny.
Just a nice guy. I mean, really nice guy. And he does. I love listening to him on the radio. I mean, I'm not even talking about Met games. But even the football stuff that he does, he really does a nice job. And he's a regular down-to-earth guy. I mean, you know, have a cold beer with him. He's a regular down-to-earth guy. Great guy.
Yeah, he's always got clean lines. He's always right on the money, too, you know.
Yeah.
He's very good. Yeah. He keeps your interest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely he does. That's what I'm saying. He really does. And it's somebody, I just told him, and I'm so mad that I couldn't remember the name, because there was somebody on the radio recently telling stories about Ed. You know, one of his you know, counterparts, you know, whatever. That they used to travel together. He was telling some funny stories about Ed, and I was driving, so I couldn't. I wanted to text him, so you better turn the radio on, defend yourself. But it was kind of funny.
He's been doing it a long time.
Being a good host of a show is very difficult. Very talented. I can't wait to hear him speak. I'm sure he has a lot of insight now on what's going on in baseball, and if he's at Citi Field with the Mets, if they're playing the Red Sox tonight. The cardboard cutouts. I can't wait to hear. I heard Chipper Jones has one of his own self. They got basic to right field. Couple runs coming in. Nice hit. Nice hit. Uh-oh, play at the plate. Here it comes.
It was funny, too, Pop. The first time that I kind of actually met him, because obviously, you know, when I said, you know, back when I was playing, it was over the radio, all that kind of stuff. And then when I'm sitting next to him at a bar, having a, you know, cold drink with, you know, my best friend and him, and it's like, I'm looking, it's really peculiar when you're talking to somebody that you've listened to on the radio all the time, and now you're seeing their face. It was really odd for the first time I did that. It was pretty cool, though.
It's got to be. It's good. He's like an icon for them, you know. It's amazing.
Oh yeah.
He's, you know, when he follows some big Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner. I mean, he's right up there with these guys. They were terrific.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, he really is. Like you said, he's been with WFAN for a million years. Done so many different. And you know, I didn't realize too. He did some radio stuff with the Olympics. So
did he
do
something with St. John's too? Did he do something with St. John's basketball? Was he involved with that?
I'm not too sure about that. A question we can ask him, but I know they said that the 88-92 Summer Olympics, 94 Winter Olympics. So
he was in South Korea. Yeah, he was in South Korea, Barcelona.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
even Norway, he was in Norway.
Wow.
Look at that.
It's amazing when they can do multiple sports, huh?
He had a great career, and he's still going. God bless him. 71 years old, he's still back.
Yeah,
he didn't
want to
stay
he's still going. And I think I know. You know, from reading up on him a little bit too, like I said, just because I, you know these guys a little bit, I really don't know their career so well.
Right.
But I think he was talking about possibly, you know, shutting it down a couple of years ago. But then he said, Brody Van, whatever, I can't even say his name. He came in. He got a little intrigued by that. He wanted to stick around, see how that would go and stuff. So I'm glad he's there. Like I said, he really does a nice job. It's you know, you get comfortable listening to these guys after a while. You really do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great thing.
It could be soothing right after a day's work. Put them on the radio.
Yeah, right.
And just listen, right? I mean, I just find it fascinating that they could be that good in multiple sports. I mean, just to know the game and know all the information of the players the way they do. I mean, there's a lot of research and work that goes into their jobs. You know, they're true
100%.
Professionals.
And just the travel, you know, I actually felt funny asking him. I said, Ed, I know you talk for a living, but can you give me 20, 30 minutes? You know, he was like, John, of course, you know, he was super nice about it, but I felt really funny asking him because this is what he does for a living. And plus, he does so much, too. Like, I don't even know if he'd be working tonight, like, because he does post-game, he does pre-game, sometimes he does the whole game, so he really is a, you know, versatile.
Yeah, that's true. They should have a pregame tonight. He should be on that. No, isn't he back with Howie Rose?
Game already started though, so he probably did it, and now he's.
And now he's
going to
do it.
As far as I know, from what he told me, he's just going to be sitting in the stand somewhere all by himself. So he'll be calling any minute.
That's great.
It's got to be a strange experience for him to do this.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a strange experience for him talking to
Mike Francesa questions.
Us knuckleheads, you know. What was that about, Francesca?
You're going to ask him anything? I'd like to know what he's, you know, I'm sure he's friends with him, but, you know, I know Francesca could be a little tough sometimes. I wonder what.
Oh, yeah, he could be hardcore. Russo, too. Russo could be a little bit of a spice, too, if you get going with him. So I know he did a couple interactions with Chris, you know, on interviews and stuff. But I'm curious to see how he gets along with, you know, with Gary Cohen and Darling and Hernandez and guys
that. That's a good question.
He's always interacting with them
guys.
In
my opinion,
you know?
He gets along great with them because, like I said, Ed's just a regular guy. So
And
again, I don't think he lasts as long as he has either, unless you are a nice guy and a good guy to get along with.
I think we better get our questions in early, John, because I think my son's going to have a lot to ask him.
That's
being
fine.
Mets fan,
I know he's a little nervous.
Being the Mets fan that he is, you know.
John, you going to ask your question? What was the question? If you were to start a team, what was that question you asked a week ago?
Who we taking as our first pick? I don't know. Who we take? We'll find out. I mean, he's seen a lot of teams in his day.
Oh, he's seen them all.
You know, he's seen the opposing teams, right? I mean, he's probably traveled his air miles. He must have fly for free for the rest of his life.
Yeah, great. Well, I think one of the incidents is he had to pay for his own flights when he came back with the Mets. I don't know what happened there, but they weren't comping him any air flights.
Oh, man.
I wonder
he wasn't too happy about that.
Tough days.
I wonder what team he liked growing up.
Those are the rough days.
Yeah, for sure.
But how great must it be? You know, you just can go right into Shea City Field now and just go wherever you want to go. It's like you got carte blanche. It's great. Don't even have to put a uniform on, John.
Yeah.
You know? It's wonderful. Well, I envy you, John, because you're able to deal with these guys one-on-one whenever you want. It's like it's like Christmas every day, you know? You could open up a different package.
And I believe me, I know how blessed I am by that. I don't take it lightly either. You know, I actually, you know, it took me – I thought about Ed a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to bother Ed. He's a busy guy, you know. So, you know, it's not as easy as you think to call someone because, again, I know they're so busy. I haven't spoken to Ed in a while, so you know I feel funny calling Ed a blue. And oh, by the way, you know, if you give me a half hour, you're done. So. Oh,
can you do me a favor? Yeah,
they're all just good guys. Which is
I got Ed Coleman coming on.
Oh,
yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Yeah,
who's he talking about?
Softball game out here. We got some fans.
The umpire.
Right. The girls had a great game here.
You know what a mute button is?
Making nice plays.
We wanted to know if you were talking to the umpire there. Who are you talking to?
No. You'll know if I'm talking to an umpire.
Oh, all right.
That's for sure.
Then I'll have to mute mine.
There's no surprises there when I talk to an umpire.
So, Pop, real quick before I get done, you ever get thrown out of a game coaching?
Oh, boy. Oh,
how
boy.
Many times? How many times? How many chances do I get? What do you think, John? What do you think, John?
I don't know. You're such a soft-spoken guy, Pop.
Well, you know what? I fight for the right reason, not the wrong. As long as it keeps my players safe,
one time,
I'll take a seat.
I'm still a little embarrassed by it, but the umpire was absolutely brutal. And all I was doing was the kid kept balking every single pitch he was balking. Even my like 14-year-old kids were like, "Coach, they couldn't get a lead. They couldn't. The kid every time he." It was the craziest thing, and I said, "You're telling me he's." And then he'd literally be sitting there taking a ball out of his glove while he's on the ball in the rubber, and all. I'm like, "I'm asking him, can he do that?" He goes, "You're just looking for a ball." I said, "I'm just asking, is he allowed to do that?" And then he just threw me out of the game. He's got to be kidding me. Throw me out. I really thought he was going to punch me.
That's unbelievable. I protested a game in Cooperstown. I didn't get thrown out for it though. I did protest it though. Sometimes you have to, you know, challenge the right way, right? I mean,
well, you know what? Sometimes you have to do it too to protect your players. You have to, you know, because otherwise they'll be thrown out, and you don't want that to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But it's not a good thing. It really isn't. I don't, you know, I condone it in a way. I mean, it has happened to me, but and I'm sure it's happened to every manager, every coach in the game at one time or another, but it's the consistency of it. If it keeps happening, I think then you got an issue, you know?
Yeah, right.
You do.
I didn't curse at him. I had no vulgarities at him. No, nothing like that. I was just like,
no.
I said, you're not answering. You know, I just said, you're not answering because you don't know the answer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
well, they don't like that either. They don't like to be put down or belittled. That's the problem.
Well, guys, I think we have Ed on the phone right now. Ed, are you with us?
I'm here.
Or there.
All right. Hey.
How are we doing,
guys? Thanks for joining us. I have John Daugherty and Pops on the line. This is a pleasure. Thanks for giving us some time tonight.
How you doing, guys? Good?
Good evening, Mr.
Good,
Coleman. It's
so
a pleasure.
I really appreciate it again.
It's a pleasure. And I'm going to say it's a pleasure, too, because finally they got another person that's a year older than me on this interview, which I appreciate. Because
yeah, I can handle
you,
that.
They've been putting little youngsters on against me, Ed. I don't know. I need some help.
So, Ed, what's the status of baseball right now? Are you at the Met game? How is the environment?
I'm at the Met game watching Jacob DeGrom pitch and shutout baseball, as usual. He's got another three innings tonight. 31 all told now. He started out with five in the opener, three more tonight. He had, 23 coming into the year. So, you know, he's just throwing. He actually hit 100, 101. I'm not sure. That gun might be a little bit off, but he's been firing the fastball pretty well early on. He's come out firing and got the changeup working tonight. So it's always fun watching Jake.
How's the state
which
of the team?
Which cardboard cutout you sit next to, Ed?
I'll sit out with the dogs out in right field. They've actually filled up right field an awful lot.
I can't believe they actually let dogs. That's so funny.
Yeah,
they're actually allowing people to do that.
I know. They got Jeff McNeil's dogs out there, Michael Conforto's dogs out there. But they actually they filled up a bunch of cardboard cutouts out in right field. They had where the seven line usually sits in center, that's filled with cardboard cutouts. They put a lot more out in right field. So they got a bunch around the park. I don't know if it helps anything, but you can take shots at them, I guess, whatever. See if you can knock them out,
It's incredible. John, I want to tell you that speaking to Mr. Coleman and having him talk like this is like having Phil Rizzuto, Frank Messam, and Bill White all rolled up into one that I'm listening to now. This is phenomenal. This is the top of the cake, John. This is the top.
I'm glad. I knew
You better be careful. If you mention Scooter, I might just say I'm going to take off. The ninth inning, Bill White. I got to go.
Exactly.
Ed, outside of the cardboard cutouts, I heard that Chipper Jones has one as well. How did the Mets look this year? As a longtime Mets fan, I'm waiting for their next World Series trip. They got the pitching, right?
Yeah, they do. They miss Marcus Stroman's out of the rotation, and they lost Syndergaard prior to the season, of course, with Tommy John. But honestly, they've had five games. This is game six for them here tonight, and DeGrom's going to give you another good effort. But they got four good efforts really out of the five. The only guy that they really disappointed was Rick Porcello, and I think he'll probably make that up next time out. Rick's a veteran guy. He knows what he's doing, and he'll figure it out next time. He wasn't very good in his first start, but everybody else pitched really well. They got a great performance out of David Peterson last night in Boston. The young kid, he was their number one draft choice back in 2017. And as a matter of fact, got drafted by the Red Sox out of high school. So he beat the Red Sox in his first major league start. So it was a big night for him. But that helped them out an awful lot. They were looking for a fifth starter, and I'm sure he'll start again on Sunday. The bullpen is still – it's a work in progress. I think they're much better. I know that Diaz has already blown a game this year, but I think he's going to be much better this year. They have Betances. Familia looks better. So, I think they'll pitch better than a lot of people think they will, and they can hit. They really haven't erupted offensively, but they did pretty well offensively in Boston up at Fenway. This Red Sox team is not very good this year. Yankees have 10 games against the Red Sox this year. I think 7 at Yankee Stadium. So that's that should be a lot of wins for the Yanks, I would imagine. Red Sox, they're just decimated in pitching, and their lineup is okay but not great.
And I caught your interview with Chris Russo about Luis Rojas as a manager, and you were comparing him a little bit with Beltran. What do you think still?
Well, I think Luis is going to be a good manager. I really do. He's got the smarts. He comes from a pretty good lineage. Felipe Alou is his father, and Felipe taught him well. There's no question. He's managed an awful lot in the Mets minor league system, and he's managed in winter ball as well, which I think serves him pretty well for this 60 game season. That's about the number of games you play during
right.
winter ball. So he kind of knows how to pace. Pace his team, and the players like him. A lot of them know him because he managed some of them, like Alonso and Jimenez and others, throughout the minor league system, McNeil. But they also respect him too. Even Robbie Cano, who's been around baseball a long time, he and Rojas are about the same age. But Cano's got a lot of respect for him. He's pulled Cano late in games for defensive purposes for Jimenez and. Cano, he finds it to be fine. He's okay as long as he gets his at-bats. I think things are going to work out pretty well. If they can stay healthy and, keep the protocols up and, keep everybody away from coronavirus, I think they've got a chance this year. There's no question.
That's a big step, the coronavirus. Boy, what a job it's done on everybody.
Yeah. It is, but
yeah,
I think
speaking
about
to that,
it,
Ed,
yeah,
I mean,
honestly,
how do you think the season? You think they're going to have any more problems? I mean, as I know you're not a fortune teller, but I mean, you think that's a crazy thing just because they're Miami, they're from Miami. We know things are not going down great in Florida. or do you just think, you know, they're going to have more problems?
You know, honestly, John, I thought it was more one team than the sport of baseball. I think, you know, I have no idea what happened. And I kind of feel bad in a sense because as a team, the Marlins are going to get blamed. You know, there's, what, 16
right.
positives, I think, at this point. But, you know, it may not be 16 guys. It can only, you know, a couple of guys might have, you know, broken protocol and, you know, they could have infected everybody else. I think it was, you know, when you look around at the positive tests around baseball outside of the Marlins, there haven't really been any, you know, since over the weekend. I think I know the Mets are, and I think most teams are really holding pretty strict to the protocols. You know, it's been hotel, ballpark, back to the hotel, you know, they're kind of eating there. Now, again, you know, you're traveling, so you're going to run into people. You know, you have bus rides, you have hotels. That's a problem, and I'm sure we haven't seen the last, you know, positives come out. But, you know, I think if you do a pretty good job as a team and just, you know, follow the rules for the most part, I think they have a shot to make it through. I said back in March, you know, when this hit in spring training, I thought that they would restart baseball, but I didn't know if they could finish.
Right.
But I actually think they have a shot. I think it's the toughest one to do because, you know, the other sports are kind of in a bubble, not football. That hasn't started yet.
Right.
Hockey and basketball are in a bubble. You can't really do baseball in a bubble. So, you know,
right.
they're trying to do the best they can. But, you know, I think they've got a shot if they can. I think one of the, you know, you mentioned Miami, and you're right. You know, that's a wake-up call. But I also think it's almost good in a sense that it happened early because it did wake people up, I think, that, you know, you
right.
after the first weekend, you know, three or four games, all of a sudden, you know, this comes down. And, you know, you got to say, hey, I think all the players have to say to themselves, you know, we're done here after, you know, 10 games or so if we don't start following the rules. And I think that might be a good wake-up call for people.
And it's really not a long season. Like you said, 60 games. I understand being away from your family, all these whatever the little inconveniences that you may have. But, again, you know, look at the other side. You don't play, you don't get paid. There's no baseball. I mean,
right.
we all feel the world needs baseball. We need sports. You know, we want to have some kind of normalcy. So, you know, for there is a little bit of inconvenience for it. But, again, I think you're right. That happened this early. Hey, guys, let's wake up a little bit. Let's do this right and not have any more problems. I felt bad, like you were
yeah.
saying, with the blaming the Marlins. Yeah. You know, your buddy Joe Beningo, he say, you know, if you put a bullet, put a gun to Manfred's head, he'd say, if any team would get it, let's have the Marlins get it, which sounds horrible. I mean, they make it a joke, but, you know, but then he did say, I shouldn't make a joke like that because, you know, these are people's lives that we're talking about here, potentially. So,
I know.
But yeah,
hopefully
they get through the season for sure.
We were talking about that earlier, that it's not really, when you think about it, guys, it's not really a surprise that it was Miami. First of all, you know, I think they were in Atlanta when this happened. The team traveled to Atlanta before they went to Philadelphia. I think it was a couple of exhibition games they had. But Miami has been a hot spot for a while. Obviously, Florida is not doing real well and hasn't for quite some time. But when you think about it, you know, if there's any team that probably has a bunch of guys who probably shouldn't be in the major leagues right now with the expanded rosters, it's probably the Miami Marlins. And, you know, you get young guys who, you know, think they're invincible, and that's sometimes what happens. So I think, you know, you just have to be a little more stringent with, you know, with some of the younger kids. And you know, maybe that's a wake-up call for them. Maybe they'll, you know, pick it up from here. We'll see. But it's not a shock that it was the Miami Marlins that this happened to.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Well, lad, we know you're at the game tonight, but you got to keep that crowd noise down a little bit.
Speaking of that, Ed, are they doing a crowd noise up at Citi Field?
Yeah, they're doing it everywhere. You know, it's actually, you know, Major League Baseball sent out crowd noise and sound effects to every Major League team. The scoreboard people at each park already have a lot of stuff there.
Right.
You know, to me, I don't. It's kind of washed over me. But I don't pay any attention to it. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't. You know, it doesn't really affect me. You can hear kind of a low buzz, and you can probably hear the drums in the background going now. I mean, it's, you know, there's nobody here to do that. There's nobody to respond to any of this stuff. But outside of the cardboard cutouts, but you know, it's just it's something that you get used to. It doesn't bother me. I don't mind. Some people said, "Oh, you can't do that. It's phony. It's fake." But you know, it is what it is, and there's nobody here.
Got to do what you got to do, right?
Might as well do something. It's still a lot less noise than what you usually hear at the ballpark. So I guess that's better for old ears like mine, I suppose.
Can you actually hear the outfielder say, I got it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys saw this last night, but I saw the film. I saw the video of it later, the Houston Dodgers stuff that was going on when Joe Kelly threw it at Correa. By the way, Kelly got 8 games for that, as a matter of fact. They hit him kind of hard. He's out of the bullpen, so that's
ouch.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll appeal it, but they hit him pretty hard. They also suspended Dave Roberts for a game too. DeGrom is going to give up a run. How about that?
We don't want that.
Double by Mitch Moreland to center, and now it's tied at 1. There you go. There's an update for you. That's the first run. He will not get to R.A. Dickey's Mets record, which was about 32 something, I think. So, but
wow, I can't believe the delay. I put the game on when you said that. What are you talking about, double?
John, we got a personal update from Ed Coleman. How much better can you be?
That's unbelievable.
Ed,
I got
one question. Go ahead, John.
Please. I have to ask before they take the show away from me, Ed. We run a travel program in Somers. We got a bunch of kids, and I challenge them to look up Ray Ordonez and his 100-game errorless streak. Was he the best shortstop you've come across?
Yes. You know, that infield with Ventura, Ordonez, Alfonso, and Olerud was the best Mets infield that I've seen. It's a shame that Ray, he was a good kid. He really was. When he finally got his act straightened out, he was a little brash when he came up, but he was a pretty good kid. If he could ever hit a little bit, he would have been, you know, he would have stayed around a lot longer, number one, but he would have been a heck of a ball player, too. He just, he can never get the offensive side of the ball, but he was one of the smoothest shortstops I've ever seen, and certainly the best Mets shortstop that I've seen. But that infield there, Ventura, Ordonez, Alfonso, and Olerud was the best. I mean, nothing really got by them. It's great. It was just great to watch them, you know, in the time they were together. So it was a lot of fun. But he was something special. And by the way, I don't know if you guys heard, but Jose Reyes announced his retirement this afternoon. So
no.
Reyes, yeah. I don't know if they did a – I'm not sure if they did a video tribute yet for him here, but I found that kind of funny. They said they were going to do a video tribute. There's nobody here. So why are you doing a video tribute?
Yeah.
But anyway, Reyes announced his retirement earlier this afternoon. So.
Now you get to travel around. And meet a lot of teams. What's your favorite place to travel to?
Well, I will say the city of Chicago is great to go to. Whether it's we I think we were there last year at the White Sox park. With the Cubs and the White Sox, played the White Sox in interleague play, so I got to go to Chicago twice. I love going to Chicago. I don't want to be there in January or February. But you put me there in the summer, I'll be fine.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And Wrigley Field is special. Ballparks that I like going to, PNC Park in Pittsburgh is tremendous. Great, great, great park. And San Francisco, which I think it's called Oracle Park now, I think. I don't know, it's changed. It was AT&T, it was something else. So I don't even know what it's called at this point. But the San Francisco Park is a great park to go to, too. So. There aren't that many bad cities to go to in the National League. Even some of the smaller cities are still, you know, good places to visit. But those two parks in particular and Chicago in general, American or National League, doesn't matter. Just get me there.
Yeah, I remember the old stadium though in Chicago. Kaminsky. Boy, that was a horror show. When the old stadium was there, yeah. But Wrigley Field was just – it was like being in your backyard watching the game. People would be picnicking.
Wrigley's great. I mean, and you know, the area around Wrigley, kind of like Fenway in Boston, you know.
My mom was from Chicago, so. I was a big Ernie Banks fan in my day. Big Ernie Banks, Ron Santos.
Did
I get crazy. Got to see him play, Ed. It was the greatest thrill of my life as a kid.
He's a great player, tremendous player. Unfortunately, he never got the World Series, but the Cubs weren't a particularly good team at that point in time. But he was a tremendous player. Hall of Fame.
No, they weren't.
Great player. Yeah.
Ed, who
being of Irish, being of Irish faith, Ed, right? And I hope I can appreciate this for you. You won a lot of awards, but how important was the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame that you won?
It's my favorite one.
I'm crushed that
Foley's is no longer.
Yeah.
Although
it's gone.
I'm hoping that that Sean can reopen it at some point in time and work something else out. He's a tremendous guy. Sean ran Foley's for years, and that was just a fun place to be. You could go in there after games and almost any time. You'd see umpire crews. You'd see a lot of visiting players and coaches, from other teams. Great place to visit. Really a terrific place. Right near the Empire State Building, and a lot of fun. He's got all the memorabilia. I know he's got all the baseballs and stuff, so I'm not sure what he's going to do with it. I think he's got it all in storage. We'll see what happens with it down the line. But, it's fun. Foley's was always a fun place.
Good memory.
I don't think there's any good word for me yet if they reopen.
I don't think I'm making it to Cooperstown, so I'll take that Hall of Fame. That's
there you go.
Well, no one's making it to Cooperstown this year, unfortunately. They've canceled all their tournaments,
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a shame, I'm not a big All-Star Game fan, but, there's no All-Star Game. Everything is kind of, just kind of messed up and... year, the trading deadline is August 31st. I'm not sure what's going to happen. And I'm not a huge fan of the 16 teams. I kind of understand it. If you're going to do different things, do it this year. The man on second, that doesn't throw me an awful lot, but I kind of get it. We've already seen that work against the Mets this year. They went to extra innings and lost to Atlanta in extra innings. And it does shorten the game, but, I can understand, a wild pitch by DeGrom, and all of a sudden he's trailing. It's 2-1.
That's not good.
Red Sox up 2-1. Yeah, this is – DeGrom is – he's not as, honestly not as sharp as he was in his first start. But, DeGrom not as sharp is probably better than 75% of most major league pitchers.
Wow, sharp.
So, he's pretty darn good. Yeah.
You said he hit 101 tonight, huh?
He hit 101. Yeah. I think that gun is a little bit off. But the last start when he came out, his first start of the year, he came out. He was throwing 99, 98, steadily right through the first inning. As a matter of fact, he didn't even throw a breaking ball. He threw all fastballs first inning and got through a 1-2-3. So he's had done his arm pumped up a little bit this year. We'll see. If it taxes him out here, but he's still throwing pretty hard now. That was a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, so still going pretty hard here in the fourth inning.
Hey,
with all the political...
The kids that are listening, I know we want to talk baseball here and stuff, but for the kids listening and stuff, can you talk a little bit how you got into into your profession? Like, was this something you always wanted to do? Or, how did that work out?
What's funny? When I started in this business, I actually started as a disc jockey. I did not start as a sports announcer. When I went to Syracuse, I didn't go for broadcasting, but eventually I went to the Newhouse School and graduated with a degree in journalism and broadcasting. I was lucky that I went to Syracuse, but I didn't go there for that reason. A lot of kids these days go to Syracuse, and that's their number one purpose going in. They want to be a radio, TV, whatever, and that's why they go. But I was lucky in that regard. But when I was a kid, I played sports. I played all three sports: football, basketball, baseball, all through high school. And I was a big sports fan. I was always playing sports, but I also loved music. Those are my two things in life. I love listening to music, and I love playing sports. And my parents would try to get me sit down and read books and do homework, and I'd say I want to go out, but I was probably like every normal kid. But when I first got out of school, I was a radio DJ. I played rock and roll music. I played all kinds of music actually over the years, but It wasn't until about 10 years after I graduated from college that I really started getting into sports. And I worked for Kurt Gowdy, who I think some of you guys may remember if you're old enough. But Kurt owned, I lived in Boston at the time, and he owned several radio stations around the Boston area and some down in Florida and Colorado. And I worked at several of them. And Kurt was a guy who he wanted the type of people that he hired, he wanted you to do everything. He wanted you to learn everything so that you'd be able to do everything if he needed you. So I was a disc jockey. I was a newsman. I did talk shows. I did sports talk shows. It was a great way to kind of learn the business at the time. I was very lucky in that regard. Eventually, there's a station in Boston called WBZ, which was the number one station in Boston at the time, and they had a lot of sports. They carried Red Sox games, Patriot games, Bruin games. They had a show called Calling All Sports that a guy by the name of Guy Minella did. You guys may not be familiar with him from New York, but he was a big name in New England and one of the first sports talk guys up there. They decided eventually after 5 or 6 years to make a weekend edition of the show. He did Monday through Friday. And I applied for the job, and, you know, I filled in occasionally and finally got the job. So that's how I kind of got into, you know, doing sports and, you know, doing talk shows and eventually ended up at FAN in New York. But that's how it came about. It's kind of a roundabout way. You know, it's today you hear a lot of kids and you talk to some announcers, you know, they'd be calling games, you know, off TV when they were, you know, 9 or 10 years old or whatever. I never really did that. I mean, I watched sports on TV and I loved it, but I never really did that. But a lot of kids, you know, do that, and they eventually, you know, become announcers and broadcasters. I kind of did it a roundabout way, but I was very glad I did it the way I did because I learned an awful lot about the business, and I also learned a lot, you know, a lot of ways you could attack the business. Let's put it that way. It worked out. You know, if you're, it's kind of like in any sport. You know, if you can be versatile, the more versatile you can be, I think the more of use you are to people or your employers. The more things that you can do, I think it, you know, it helps you in that regard. So I was fortunate, you know, that I ended up working for Kurt and that came up that way.
Ed, we lost a good man at John McNamara. He passed away, at Red Sox, and the Angel manager.
Yeah.
Actually, he was the manager that helped with the Bill Buckner catastrophe. Did you get a chance to meet and talk with him?
I did meet Mac, and he was a very good man, very good man. I always kind of felt bad for him because he took a lot of grief. You know, at the time that – I don't know if you guys remember, but – late in games, they would pull Buckner out of games and put in Dave Stapleton at first base.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, Mac, I don't know if it was, you know, the next year or whatever, but he finally admitted that, you know, the reason he left Buckner out there was for the moment. And he deserved to be out there. You know, Bill was the first baseman. You know, it's kind of like when you see you know, somebody who's a great player, and all of a sudden, you know, late in the game, eighth or ninth inning or whatever, you might put somebody in for defensive purposes or whatever. McNamara always felt that was Buckner's moment. He should be there. If Stapleton's there, maybe he makes that play, and maybe the Red Sox win the World Series.
Than
2004, but not to be. You know, that's life. And Mac took some hits for that, I know, and for other things as well, too. But I thought he was a very good man. You know, I'm not sure how good a manager he was. I was never all that impressed with him being a great manager. But as far as a person, he was, you know, he's a good person. I think his players liked him. They liked playing for him. So, yeah, I was sad to hear that today.
Yeah, well, that's too, yeah. John, back to you, I guess, huh?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Pops. Ed, final two questions, and then we'll let you get back to that packed stadium of yours. My son's a Gleyber Torres fan. It must be such a surreal experience for you. My son's a Gleyber Torres fan. Is he the real deal?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, I guess it sounds crazy because of all the sluggers they have, Judge and Stanton and, you know, who else am I missing? I don't know. The Yankees are loaded. But to me, when I look at the Yankees, I think Gleyber Torres is their best all-around player. I really do. I don't think he's a great defensive player yet. But maybe he never will be, but I think offensively, I think he can do it all. And I think he's going to be a terrific player. I think he's the real deal. I really do. I think, if the Yankees, listen, the Yankees are loaded and they have a lot of depth, but if you lost to Gleyber Torres, I think they'd be in a lot of trouble. I really do. I think he's that good.
Final question, Ed. If you had one pick, you're starting a team, all-time Mets, who's your first pick?
All-time, that's the all-time.
Remember Keith and Dowling. Remember Keith and Dowling now. You got to look at them.
No, I know. But that's. I mean, if I had to pick, so you'd have to pick Tom Seaver. I mean, if I had to pick a Met or Mr. Met, it's got to be Tom Seaver. The guy who I've covered who, would be number one is David Wright. That's hands down, both on the field and off the field. I mean, I don't think there's – anybody better, and there's no better person. So he's obviously a guy that, comes to mind right away. But I think if you had to pick the all-time Met, I know, there's Doc Gooden, there's Darryl, there's any number of guys. But Tom Seaver was the man. I mean, he was the franchise. I met Tom when he was a broadcaster here, and got to know him pretty well during that time, but I was not here. I was in Boston, when he was here in New York pitching, and, I've seen film, et cetera. I remember watching him. I remember watching his 300th win, when he was with the White Sox, I think at that time, but, he was just a terrific pitcher. And when he went out and wore down, I don't think there was anyone better on the bump. He was that good. So if I had to pick anybody, it'd be the franchise, I guess, Tom Seaver. Yeah.
All right, my wife would be disappointed. She loved Lee Mazzilli.
I'm sorry, Bob. I'm really glad you mentioned David Wright, though. I was fortunate enough, I went to one of his charity card games, years ago and stuff like that. But like how you were talking about on the field and off the field, because that's kind of what we're always trying to preach to the kids here. And Steve Grilly we had on early. I don't know if you remember Steve Grilly.
Sure, I do.
Yeah, Steve's a great guy. And he was talking about, that as well. Like, he mentioned about kids, they were going to a batting cage and they were lifting up the net and going in one at a time. And this one kid came up over the net, waiting for the rest of the guys to come through. And then he dropped the net. He said, you'd be my team captain if I was the coach. Like, so in other words, he's looking out for everybody. So
that's
what we're looking for too, with these players and trying to teach them that you could be the greatest player in the world, but if you're not a good person, nobody cares how great you are, So I'm really glad you mentioned David Wright, because that's what it's all about. You got to be good on the field. You got to be just as good in the dugout and off the field as well.
You know what? I've said this a lot, and one of my favorite Mets of all time is Cliff Floyd. I don't know if you guys remember Cliff Floyd.
Oh, I certainly do.
And I'll tell you, and the reason why is, and he's not the only guy, but the reason I've always said that is that he was a great teammate. He cared about his teammates. He cared about. He was not only a good player between the lines, but he was a good guy in the clubhouse as well. Took the young players under his wing. To me, it's very important to be a good teammate. I just think it makes your team a heck of a lot better when you come together like that and you take care of the other people around you and you make sure that you try to make the other people around you better. And there are guys like that that have played for the Mets. Robin Ventura was another guy like that. Cliff Floyd, there's a number of them over the years. They may not be the greatest, Met or greatest player on a team, but they're an important member because they're a great teammate. And that's always been important to me. And I think players in any sport that are like that, that make other players better and, hold other people accountable and hold themselves accountable. Those are the type of people you want to play with.
And I grew up with Doc Gooden. He was my idol, and I tried to pitch like him, and I fell a little short. I had a chance to meet him. I met him a couple of months ago. What a lot of stars the Mets have had, and yourself included. I love listening to you. I appreciate you coming on tonight. All the kids, I'm sure, had a great time, and I look forward to hearing more from you and listening to your broadcasts. Thanks for joining us.
I'm a big kid, and I had a great time.
Hey, anytime, guys. It's great great talking with you. I appreciate it. Okay, thanks very much.
Been a pleasure.
And thank you very much, brother. We'll talk soon. You have a great night. Thank you so much again.
All right, John. See you later.
Let's go Mets. Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.
See ya.
All right. Wow. That was incredible. What a great experience that was. Thank you, John Daugherty. I enjoyed that. Pops, I'm sure you enjoyed that quite a bit.
Extremely. This was a treat for me. This was great. Thank you, John. I got to thank you all the time. You're doing an incredible job.
I appreciate it. A lot of fun, guys. A lot of fun.
You know, the hardest part, Pops, when you're speaking to someone like this with his background and the years of experience in MLB and the different people that he's encountered and his knowledge of every player, you just don't know which questions you want to ask first.
You know what? Any question is a good question to a gentleman like that because he's going to answer you the honest and the right way. So it doesn't matter what question you ask him. He's going to give you the right answer. So you worry about.
And, John, you're so right to
hey, John,
knowledge. We could have asked a football question. He would have went on for a half hour. I mean, the guy just knows everything.
Oh, totally.
It's amazing. And you kind of have to. So, I think after a while it becomes a gift. But I also got to believe, you got to really work at your craft all the time because names are constantly changing. The game is constantly changing. The rules are constantly changing for all these different sports that he talks about.
Yeah, now you see the two players he mentioned is completely off the chart from what we would be thinking. Come on.
It's
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, David Wright.
David Wright, as great as he was, he mentions David Wright, too. So there you go.
You know what I find interesting, and this is something that the kids could take away from listening to Ed, he can critique a major leaguer like Gleyber Torres. And you're talking about at that level, he's a weaker infielder, right? Super hitter, but even at the major league level, they could be a weaker fielder. I mean, you can never stop working on your craft. You can never stop working on your game, no matter how good you think you are.
Yeah, well, me and John were just talking about that in the break before, just going over that. John was very, very informative on that area.
You're crazy if you do. I'm telling you, guys, It cracks me up when years ago when I first started doing lessons and gotten out of the game, kids are like, hitting off a tee, how am I going to get better? It's like, oh, my God, if I only knew how guys, all they do is hit off a tee. So many off a tee, it's amazing how many.
Yeah, and they hit the ball out of the stadium too, right? I mean, A-Rod was hitting them, I guess, upper deck, I heard.
John, I was going to try to put a plug into you with Ed Coleman about becoming an announcer. I think you got the qualifications, and I'm not kidding. I really do.
That's very telling you, but I take the Irish Hall of Fame, though. I would take that.
You can get into that. That's not hard for you, John. You get into that, but I mean really announcing.
You've got to be nominated first. I'm like, I can't nominate myself. But I've been there before. I actually did a radio thing there, an interview years and years and years ago.
Okay.
And it's so funny, Pops. I appreciate you saying it. It's very kind. I mean, when I did this years ago with Rob Astorino, our former county executive, a couple of the guys, they said, why don't you try and go into that? And I'm like, it was just one of those things, I think, I had little kids. You want to be around as much as you can. Jim Cott was like one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. Jim.
Yeah, a great man. He was.
He actually invited me up to the booth. He said, why don't you come up? I'll teach you the ropes. And I'm like, when I think that I had Jim Cott say that to me and I didn't do it, like, what was I thinking? But
yeah,
it was also,
you weren't.
Yeah, I grew up with, my high school coach, so I mentioned to you guys all the time, Dom Cicieri, and I know what he did, all the stuff and hours that he put in outside of his home with so many other kids and stuff, and how he lived, how he felt about that and all that kind of stuff. He just had the old school work ethic. And it's something that I knew that I didn't want to be like him in that sense. That I mean, because I wanted to be like him in every other way. But in a sense that I, not that he didn't want to be around his kids. Just, again, he grew up in a different era. His work ethic was the first one there, last one to leave. 100%, that whole thing. And I just, I wanted to make sure I was around my kids. I mean, and then so I knew if I got into that, and that's why one of the reasons I didn't become going to coaching, which the San Diego Padres actually offered me something after only being there for several weeks. If I try to come back from my knee injury, and I was like, my daughter was 3 months old, I'm married, 18 months or whatever. Oh, no, actually, well, I got married first, then I had the child. I'm not a good math person. But you understand what I'm getting at. I'm just married like a year or so. My daughter was just born. And it's like, I'm not going to go, you know,
fuck right
around in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't want to do it. I mean,
yeah.
I would have loved to, and I really feel that
sure,
I would
have been good at it.
Level as a coach. There's no doubt I really feel I would have got there at some, how long I would have stayed there, whatever. But it's
we could have been calling you to come on the show, you know.
Exactly. It's not easy. That's something else we could ask yet. I mean, you know, he's away from his family a lot.
Yeah,
that's
What a great, just his voice alone makes you, you know, just sit back and listen, you know. Incredible.
Sure does. You can listen all night. You can listen all night. I'm going to put the Met game. I'm going to put the Met game on, Pops. Just want to plug one of our teams that came back from a tournament last weekend. Our 14U team. They won the whole tournament. And there'll be a new banner going up inside the facility. The back cave will have a new championship banner. Very proud of that team. We had another 12U team finish in the finals. They lost in the last game. So another good ball club that almost did very well. They're going down to another tournament. We wish them well. What a great show. I hope there's a lot of listeners that got to hear Ed Coleman talking with Silverbacks Nation. That's a special treat for us. It was a pleasure to have him on, and I hope we can have him on again, John.
Hopefully, too. I would be shy to ask him again, but maybe not during the season.
I know. He's overwhelmed with the crowd noise, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and I know I preach this every week. Like I said, I'm so fortunate. Some of these guys, you know, I'm not calling guys that are not good guys. I mean, that's just it. They're just really good guys. They know this is like a mom and pop show, and I always say literally mom and pop because one of the guest hosts is a pop, and he goes by pop. So it's literally mom and pop. And I tell him, you know, only X amount of listeners. This isn't 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 people listening, and they still want to do it because they have a nice message, which is, you know, I'm hoping again
they
the
do.
Kids and the parents are reiterating that message to the kids each and every week.
I think you're preparing them for me too, though, John. Is that true?
I'm sorry?
Are you preparing them for me? Is that true, John? I get that little feeling, you know.
Nobody prepares more than you. I'm going to try and get somebody really difficult that you can't find anything about. Then we'll see what kind of skills you have.
Good luck with that. So listen, guys. Thank you very much for tonight, Pops. John Daugherty. We're going to say goodnight.
No problem. My pleasure, John. You take care of yourself now. Talk to you soon.
Yes. Get home safe, John, and Pops. Have a great night. John, do
you
me a favor, send me Pop's phone number. Well, I want to be able to keep in touch with Pops during the week. I need his cell phone number, so send it to me, all right?
You got it.
You can call me anytime, day or night, kid.
Sounds good. Have a great night, guys.
Well,
be safe.
You too, buddy.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
To all those listening, good night, Silverbacks Nation. Good night to all those players and parents listening. Once again, you can hear the rest of our shows at www.NewYorkSilverbacksBaseball.com. Looking forward to seeing everybody on the field. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.